You're listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network, and this is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. And returning with me today is my good friend, Dr. Eric Karlstrom. And the topic for today's show is Structure is Strategy in Slow Motion. So I'm going to bring Eric up right now. Eric, are you with me?
Yeah, good morning, Andy. Good to be with you again. And we have a very deep and extensive topic. Looking forward to our discussion here.
Yes, me too. And before we get into the definition of the title of the show, could you just give the audience details of where they can find you on the internet? I know you have a variety of different websites that cover a variety of different issues.
Yeah, well, I was a geography professor for 30 years at three universities, and did the usual academic thing, which kept me very busy. But towards the latter part of my career, I really broadened out into public issues with a series of websites. One of them is 911nwo.com. Another one is naturalclimatechange.org. Another one is gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. Another one is San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com. And then my musical website, something I've always enjoyed doing, and is got a lot of CDs on it, is erickarlstrom.com. So these are informational websites. They're free. It's kind of a digital library of information. I do this as a public service, and because I believe that being a citizen has responsibilities as well as it carries with it responsibilities as well as rights, should. And as our rights get whittled away deliberately, our responsibilities have to come to the fore. And I think that's what we're doing here, Andy.
Yes, I agree. And we've done this so often. I just checked back on our history, and this is our 19th show together, Eric. So thank you so much for all the excellent work that you've contributed to this program. I think I made the joke to you once a few months ago when we were talking after the show that it seems to be that you do all the work and I get a lot of the credit, but your research, for example, for today's show, folks, it's about 58 pages. So what we'll do is, if you want to do a part two or more than that, then we can do. So don't feel that you need to rush through and cram it all in. If you think it's a topic worthy of further shows, then we could just run it as a series, if you like, Eric.
Oh, that's, well, let's see how it goes, Andy. I think it could be a good idea. This is a very important topic. Structure is strategy in slow motion. And I think we could subtitle it perhaps How the Jewish Criminal Syndicate Controls the United States. And, this is not the sort of thing that I would have taught, because you can't deal with this. In fact, most of my career, I would not have known hardly anything about this. It's the sort of thing that one does not learn in traditional academic courses of study, usually. One has to apply oneself on an individual basis and saturate themselves with as much information as possible. Now, in my 911nwo.com website and my gangstalking mindcontrolcults.com websites, there's a bunch of subheadings in each one, and one of them is the controllers. So over time, I've put together, information that I've gathered from my research about, who's really pulling the strings here. And, the picture starts to become clear after you read, a lot of books and compare, kind of triangulate the information you get. Of course, your book went right to the point. Your book, Synagogue of Satan, talks about this very subject and how this particular group has kind of managed to infiltrate various governments and control events through a kind of a coordinated effort. Now, of course, Kevin McDonald is the California State University professor who has written a number of books about this. It talks about the Jewish evolutionary strategy to operate as a collective and to, in their own self-interest, and to you know, kind of a winner-take-all strategy of global conquest. And he does so in a very kind of a cut-and-dry academic, down-to-business sort of way, which is I think, very, very good approach. You know, I mean, the powers that be can accuse one of hate speech very quickly, or something like that, because, you know, you're not supposed to say anything that could be construed as being, quote unquote, anti-Semitic. But in fact, we're looking at realities here. And I don't mean to hate anybody, but I do wish to understand the world around me and understand the power politics that, you know, kind of are under the surface, you know. And here's a quote that I'll read to start off that really kind of expresses what I've learned. I guess we can call it a working hypothesis and we can test it. Here's what Hugh Aiken says in his book, Synagogue Rising. He's a Catholic. This came out in 2012. He says, Israel was behind all fronts in 9/11, that momentous event in our nation's history. Number one, the actual terror attacks themselves. Number two, the subsequent cover-up. And both number three, the U.S.-led military invasions overseas. And number four, the domestic security state apparatus. This is the American police state. This is another segment. He's still Hugh Aiken's talking. This is the American police state under construction right now under our very noses. It is by far the most deadly aspect of the bogus war on terror. Foreign and domestic. What amounts to the New York, Tel Aviv, Washington, D.C., Axis of Evil's home front application of its phony war. It's the more deadly of the two because it targets not true-to-life terrorists who are allowed to stream across our southern borders or who are granted dual U.S.-Israeli citizenship and allowed to control the topmost levers of power in politics, finance, business, national defense, and American security. There's our topic today. But rather, they're targeting the ones to be targeted are American Christians, ordinary good citizens and patriots, especially those of the Catholic and Christian persuasions. Okay, there's our gang stalking, Andy. So there is a, you know, brief two paragraphs that kind of summarize, I think, the reality that we're facing in the United States and the world, which is that the United States as a nation has been captured by a fifth column group. That has infiltrated all institutions and controls them. Remember in our, I'm really very proud of the presentation that we did on 9/11 of last year. In that, we discussed what really happened on 9/11. And I had come to the conclusion based on two major sources as a summary kind of a lot more work. You know, Webster Tarpley's book, 9/11's Synthetic Terror Made in the USA, fifth edition, talks about 46 drills that were conducted on the day of and leading up to September 11th that flipped live on the day. And how many institutions, you know, from the White House to NORAD to the CIA, the Pentagon to New York City fire departments to the UN to, you know, down 50 organizations. The FAA, U.S. Department of Transportation, Canadian government, Coast Guard, FBI, FEMA, Mayor of New York City, all these institutions were involved in these drills. And this is well documented in newspaper accounts. And so at first blush, it appears that 9/11 was an inside job and it was conducted by, quote unquote, the interagency. But then the second aspect of it that we discussed is that there was a pivotal role played by Israeli Mossad, by Jews and crypto Jews in America, secret Jews, and that these two somehow operated together. So the question was left dangling. Okay, who did it? Was it the interagency or was it the Jews? And of course, Christopher Bolin comes out with the second conclusion in his book, Solving 9/11. But he only deals with half the issue. Webster Tarpley only deals with half the issue. We're trying to see how this fits together. And this really is our topic for today, Andy. How does this work? How has this small group of people, supposedly only about 18 million in the world, I think those numbers are radically underreported, How does this 18 million people control the largest country in the world and the largest military in the world? That's our topic for today. Structure is strategy in slow motion, how infiltration works, how crypto-Jewish organizations control policy, such as the neoconservative movement, which is crypto-Jewish in the sense it's entirely a Jewish political movement within the Republican Party, neoconservatives, but they don't acknowledge that they're Jewish. It's a secret, so hence crypto-Jewish. And then, you know, the same names keep coming up over and over and over again. You know, Richard Pearl, you know, the, what do they call him, the Prince of Darkness, and William Crystal, and Ludi and Faith, and Abrams, and right on down the line, we can talk about these names. So many of them with dual Israeli-American citizenship. See, this is the only country in the world is that allowed in America to have dual citizenship with the United States, Israel. So we have this extremely exceptional and special relationship with Israel that has allowed them to infiltrate all aspects of our government and then act as a team, in effect, to advance the interests of Israel. And this is what we see with all these, you know, pre-scripted wars in the Middle East that were all, as you well know, prescripted by the neocons think tank Project for a New American Century. Their manifesto came out in the year 2000, Rebuilding America's Defenses, you know, and this was written by the conservative, neoconservative Jews of the PNAC. And they said, okay, these are the countries that we have to invade. We're going to have to double the defense budget from about $300 billion to about $600 billion. A year, and this is likely not going to be acceptable to the American people, absent a cataclysmic and catastrophic event such as a new Pearl Harbor. Well, so they prescripted that, they pre-planned the wars, and it's all gone down according to their script. And of course, if we look at the PNAC documents, this plan for the Israel to take over the Middle East, the Greater Israel, Eretz Israel, which has always been the plan of Israel, you know, to take the whole Middle East as their base. And that means they have to wipe out their Arab neighbors or Balkanize them. This is the plan. And this comes again from previous plans. A clean break was a plan written in the 90s, I think, in Israel. And that's based on the Oded Yanon plan of the 80s. He's an Israeli journalist. Says, okay, we have to Balkanize our neighbors because they're too rich and they're too powerful. We want it all. We want our borders for Eretz Israel, Greater Israel, to go from, you know, from the Nile in Egypt over to the Tigris and Euphrates in Iraq and, you know, that's going to be Greater Israel. Well, this is what Ben-Gurion said in 1948 when the State of Israel was formed. And this is what the Rothschild had in mind when they designed the flag with the two bars at the top and the bottom of the Israeli flag with this quote-unquote Star of David in the middle. Well, those two bars supposedly represent the Nile River and the Tigris-Euphrates. So now that's the Greater Israel from which they intend to take over the world. So how does this happen? How can 911 be the product of both the U.S. interagencies, these 50 major groups, and also, quote unquote, the Jews? Well, here's a statement by former Italian President Francisco Cossiga. All intelligence services of America and Europe know well that the disastrous attack of 9/11 had been planned and realized from the Mossad, with the aid of the Zionist world, in order to put under accusation the Arabic countries and in order to induce the Western powers to take part in Iraq and Afghanistan wars. It could not be accomplished without infiltrations in the radar and flight security personnel. Okay, that's the former president of Italy. Dr. Alan Zabrowski, it is 100% certain that 9/11 was a Mossad, that's Israeli intelligence, operation, period. He also states that high-level U.S. military officers know that Israel is dead. This is from Christopher Bublin. And then this is the most strident. Here is an Israeli spokesman, Zipporah Menashe. in an article, six Jewish companies control 96% of the world's media. She says, you know very well, and the stupid Americans know equally well, that we control their government irrespective of who sits in the White House. You see, I know it, and you know it, that no American president can be in a position to challenge us, even if we do the unthinkable. What can they, Americans, do to us? We control Congress. We control the media. We control showbiz. We control everything in America. In America, you can criticize God, but you can't criticize Israel. And then, of course, Ariel Sharon, the prime minister of Israel, he accentuated the point in October of 2001 when asked about 9/11. He says, look, you know, you say America's going to do this, America's going to do that. Let me be very clear. We, the Jews, we, Israel, control America, and the Americans know it. Okay, so that seems to be the case. And I didn't come to this with any, I came to this through my research, not through any animosity towards any particular race or religion or creed. You know, this is just the reality. You know, if blacks had controlled the United States and carried off these heinous attacks, I would have to say blacks did it, but blacks didn't do it. You know, there is this tribe. So how does this tribe function? How do they do it? How do they get in there and operate like a collective, operate like a team to advance their own interests? This is their evolutionary biological strategy, according to Dr. Kevin McDonald. How do they do it? And so that's what I wanted to talk about today. So, well, certainly we have the dual Israeli-American citizenship phenomenon. A lot of these guys you go down the list of the influential people, and they go back and forth between Israel and the United States. And they go to the synagogue of Satan, and they say, I always put Israel's interests first. Okay, so there they are. This is what Chuck Schumer said, Senator Chuck Schumer said in a synagogue. You know, I'm a great friend of Israel, and I put Israel's interests first. He is a senator from New York, you know, but he puts Israel's interests first. Well, I think we can say that that's what all of them do. You know, Dov Zakheim in the controller in the Pentagon at 9/11, you know, missing something like $3.6 trillion. Where did that go? Well, it could have been Operation 9/11 and a whole bunch of other corruption. He also, you know, oversaw more weapons sales to Israel than any other time in the history of the Pentagon. And he's a rabbi, you know, he's a Chabad Lubavitcher. And so many of these guys are Chabad Lubavitchers. And Chabad Lubavitchers look at non-Jews as beasts, as cattle, as goyim, you know, Ari Fleischer. I mean, you just go down the list of the people in government during 9/11. Let's start at the top. George W. Bush, crypto-Jewish. His ancestors, George and Solomon Bush, were here at the time of the Revolutionary War, funding the Revolutionary War, and making statements about how, you know, Jews were going to rule the world in the future. There was a George Bush during the Civil War who was a professor who said Jews are going to rule the world in the future. And then, of course, we have Prescott Sheldon Bush and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, all members of Skull and Bones, which is a satanic secret society fraternity out of Yale, which is, in fact, an American extension of the Illuminati Order of Death in Germany. So, you know, the Bushes are a German Jewish Illuminati family, third tier, according to Eustace Mullins. I've always been serving the Illuminati agenda. And if you look at the last four generations, you see they've all been profiting mightily from all the wars. And then go back a fourth generation, you got, what's the guy's name? It's a different Bush who was head of the War Industries Board during World War I, and he sold small weapons to all 75% of all the small arms to all sides of World War I. So, I mean, this is what these guys do. They profit off weapons and drug sales. This is the combination of control of finance and control of the world revolutionary movement, which has been so effective in moving the world towards their Illuminati goal of, you know, destroy all nations, destroy all religions, destroy the family, destroy private property, destroy all monarchies, so that, you know, we can usher in our kingdom of a universal Jewish empire, our Jewish utopia, which, as it turns out, if we look a little deeper yet and go to the work of Tex Mars, we see that this is, in fact, the kingdom of Satan, and that they do, and your work, they represent the synagogue of Satan. They are Satan's emissaries on the earth, as Jesus himself said. You know, ye are of your father, the devil, and as lest you will do. He was a liar from the beginning and a murderer, blah, 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 blah. That's John 8:44, I believe. So, I mean, you know, we start to, and I quote that not because I want to prove the Bible, but because it seems that reality, history does prove that Jesus was correct in his accusations against the Pharisees. And as Tex Mars points out, the Pharisees of 2,000 years ago are identical to theologically to the Orthodox Jews of today. I mean, they have the same worldview. And, you know, Jesus had lots of words for them, very strong words that the Christian ministers and priests hardly ever mention in the pulpit, you know, unfortunately. You know, vipers and hypocrites and, you know, right, you know, you're like, what is sepulchres? And right on down, you know, it, just lots and lots of very strong words he had for them, the strongest condemnation. So that's the battle. And we are engaged at a level now that it would appear that this tribe has taken over the most powerful country in the world through these wily techniques. And again, the notion of structure is strategy as in slow motion is you put these people in all kinds of positions, and then they're in positions of power. Donald Rumsfeld was the defense secretary during 9/11, and from what I've read, Rumsfeld, Filled, different spelling, German Jewish origin, many generations ago, crypto Jewish, came to the United States, and he with Cheney came into the government in the 70s. Now, if you look a little deeper here, if you go to the interviews with Kay Griggs, the amazing interviews with Kay Griggs, which I've transcribed now for my websites. Kay Griggs was the ex-wife of George Griggs, a colonel who was a Marine Corps assassin, special ops guy, very powerful in the, you know, highest circles of government, you know, would have known George H.W. Bush and Rumsfeld and Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft and McFarlane and all these guys. She names the names in these interviews. You know, you want to know who did Oklahoma City? Go to these interviews. She'll tell you which generals did it. You want to know, you know, who did this and who did that? Well, these are special ops guys out of our own military doing these dirty tricks and dirty ops. And but anyway, so the story there, and I'm trying to, you know, bring this around to how they do it. As it turns out, Kay Griggs has a, you know, she's a descendant of James Madison. She's an old Virginia family, very politically connected, very smart lady with a bachelor's in Virginia history and a master's in Scottish history, and her husband was basically a Jason Bourne kind of super soldier robot, who was very much a killer robot, but he liked to drink, and when he drank, he just talked and talked and talked and told her everything. So she remembered, being a smart lady, and she did these interviews, one of which, Andy, was with your friend, Daryl Bradford Smith. And it was as a result of listening to your interview, Andy, with Smith, that you just did in March, that you rattle off a bunch of the people, names of the people that he had interviewed over his career. And one of them was Kay Griggs. So then I looked that up, and then I annotated that. And that has to be the most amazing interview, where she really tells how the process works. And here's how it works. Okay, Alan Dulles, gopher for the New World Order, and his brother, John Foster Dulles, both of whom were at the inception, co-founders of the Council on Foreign Relations in 1921, thereby taking the mantle from Jewish advisor to President Edward Mandel House, who was an agent of the Rothschilds. So then and these guys were lawyers, Sullivan and Cromwell, the number one legal firm in New York City for the Rockefellers, et cetera, another second tier Illuminati family, crypto Jewish as well, from Germany as well. So these guys were young lawyers at that point, and they go on to help draft the Treaty of Versailles, which of course put Germany on its backside and made World War II inevitable. And then in 1933, and there were also, especially Allen was involved in intelligence in World War II and before in Europe and in World War I. So in 1933, I think perhaps the greatest act of treason ever in American history occurred when Allen and his brother, John Foster Dulles, went to Hitler in 1933 and said, "Hey, we, Wall Street, want to give you a lot of loans so you can build your country back, so you can go to war. Will you guarantee that you'll pay these loans back?" Hitler said, "Yes." Okay, so then the great big transfer of wealth was inevitable. And of course, while America was struggling and starving through the Depression, all this Wall Street money is going over to Germany. Well, so that, you know, set up the stage then for what, 60 to 100 million people being killed in World War II. You call that treason? I call that treason. Not only to America, but, to humanity. So then, of course, Dulles is the first CIA director and presides over all these covert operations, counterinsurgency wars all over the world in which neocolonialism occurs, and all these countries that thought they were going to get independent after World War II, in fact, were brought back into a colonial mode by all these covert ops of the CIA. Going down the list, I can do that in another interview, of the heinous crimes of the CIA, perhaps one of the greatest criminal organizations other than this particular tribe in history, although I'm sure they're quite related. But anyway, of course, it was Dulles who was fired after the Bay of Pigs in 1961, who set up a kind of his own little CIA operation privately, and probably was the CEO of the Kennedy assassination in 1963. So there he goes from 1921 being there at the foundation of the Council on Foreign Relations, which basically runs in the United States, taking orders from the roundtable groups in Britain, which take orders from the Rothschilds, all the way to the Kennedy assassination. Okay, so in the Kay Griggs interviews, we learn, and this is the point of all this. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I'm not rambling. I'm trying to get to this point, which is, how structure is strategy in slow motion. And here's how it works. There's a layer, a level that I'd never realized, and I think most people don't realize. Allen Dulles, she thinks, is responsible for bringing her husband and people like Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, this whole group that she calls the Brotherhood of a certain age, he thinks, and they're not Jewish necessarily. Some might be crypto Jews, but they're not Jewish. And how are they? What happens to them? Well, these are young men who are scouted out and considered to be for relatively poor families, but they're men. They're young men with high potential, it is thought, and then they are given a free ride financially to Princeton or some other Ivy League school, and they are homosexually hooked into this brotherhood. They at the age of 14, 15, 16, they're invited to all these parties with all these older generals and things like that. And then they become part of a system, the brotherhood, which then is much more, has much more allegiance to itself and members of that system than to, say, the government for which they work. And these guys, like the Jews, they form kind of a Gentile front. But if you look deep, and Kay Griggs looked deep, who is behind this system? Well, it's always the Jews who are recruiting these young men, who are Jewish guys, who are recruiting these young men into these homosexual parties, who are giving them the scholarships to Princeton and to the cap and gown elite fraternities, who are setting them up with all these debauched parties. They become, homosexual, bisexual pedophiles. And now they can be controlled because, you know, you step out of line, you know, you're going to destroy you. If you don't step out of line, you rise right to the top. You become a rising star. And this apparently is how it works. So again, structure, strategy, and slow motion. How do we get, or how do they get people in top positions? Well, if you're part of this tribe and you have dual Israeli-American citizenship, automatically your allegiance is to, you know, the tribe and to Israel. But if you're one of this group of what she calls the Brotherhood, like her husband, Colonel George Griggs was, perhaps is, you're hooked. You're hooked in with these enticements, with these, you know, debauched parties. And she actually, I have all these interviews on my websites, 911nwo.com and gangstalkingmindcontrol.com. Gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com, and she believes that the U.S. military is a mind control operation run by these sexual deviants. In other words, the top generals are part of this. Okay, so you say, well, how in the world could our military be doing all these insane wars in the Middle East that only help Israel? Well, this is how. I mean, they get rid of the good people. They destroy their careers, and then they bring on the people who will play ball. And so hence the statement that I made at the beginning by Hugh Aikens about how Israel is behind these wars, etc., the phony war on terror, the 9/11 operation. Yes, true. But it's bigger than that. It has an American component. And a third component, now I've talked about the dual Israeli-American citizens. I've talked about this group, the Brotherhood, which is homosexually recruited and hooked into allegiance. And by the way, everything's about funny money. Everything's about, according to Ked Griggs, it's all about the weapons sales. It's all about the drug sales. And this, and she says that the at the top levels of the military, they are the top guys are hooked in. Absolutely hooked in with the New York and New Jersey mob. And the mobs then also control the port authorities throughout the country. So, and these mobs are controlled ultimately by the Jewish mob, the Meyer Lansky crowd. So now we're finding the connections. We're looking at, okay, how does this one tribe control the largest and most powerful country in the history of the world? Well, so we have these, you know, these crypto-Jewish organizations like PNAC, Project for New American Century, got all these Jewish lobby groups, as you know, AIPAC and JINSA and ADL, et cetera, which are very, very well-funded and very, very powerful. We have this Brotherhood, which was absolutely new to me, but it makes a lot of sense. And again, Ked Griggs names these names. So, I think we're starting to see a little bit now how this might work. Would you like to jump in, Andy? I've been going and going here.
No, that's good. I've been enjoying you going through the background there, and you did so much research. I wanted you to take as long as you needed. Essentially, one of the points that I was going to raise was, I don't know if you're familiar with a researcher called Brendan O'Connell out of Australia, who's now living in exile in Malaysia because he's under all these trumped-up charges in Australia. And he was tortured in prison and had his arm broken and refused medical treatment, etc., etc. Well, recently he released a video, because one thing that he's really been pushing is this Israeli operation that's called Operation Talpiot. And what Operation Talpiot is basically the plan that Israel put in process for decades, by whereby they would get control of all the high-tech industry throughout the world. And so essentially that means that they control all the computer systems and networks around the world, and they do this by building backdoors into all the systems that they operate, etc. And he recently, after he started bringing that information out, was when he started really getting persecuted in Australia. And he recently published a 2-minute video, and this 2-minute video resulted in him having his access to his computer, his email access was changed, all sorts of stuff. And it was just revealing how Talpiot really works in just a 2-minute video, and how they're behind all the different chips that are coming out, like the Intel chips, etc., and they're involved in the AMD chips and all these different things, could be an indicator of why the governments around the world just dance to their tune. Because if they've got the ability to say, right, if you don't do what we tell you, then we'll just shut down your computer system, then that's the whole country now. It all runs on computers. So that's the country blown back to the Stone Age, because everything is computerized. Your water system, your electricity, your internet, everything. And so I don't know if you've heard of Operation Talpiot at all. I feel, of course, that the control is already there, but I think that there could be something else behind it, almost a bit like their Samson option, where if we start to rebel against them, then they will literally take the whole world down with them. Have you heard about Operation Talpiot? Does it sound feasible to you?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got some of Brendan O'Connor's videos on my website. So I've watched them with great interest. It sounds very feasible. I mean, if you look at who owns, you know, Google and MySpace, you know, and all of these Facebook things, all of these media are owned by Jews, and they are a part of an intelligence operation, you know, to gather information on all of us. But yeah, the very control of the high tech sector. We saw that with 9/11. You know, there's a number of things that happened on 9/11. Again, structure is strategy in slow motion. One of them was that a computer company, PTEC, which had, I think Jewish owned, was able to control, you know, all of the communications going back and forth on the day of 9/11. And we also had, of course, all these drills that I've talked about. And there were a number of things that had to happen for that operation to be successful. But yeah, control of the high-tech communications and Talpiot, he makes a very good point that this has been a strategy for the last 4 decades, and that Israel has achieved this this technological supremacy. I suppose if you look at, you know, Silicon Valley, which is sometimes called Surveillance Valley in California, this is really one of the major hearts of all this. And I can't say which ones. The computer industry really is owned by Jews, isn't it? I mean, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and the whole thing, you know, is Zuckerberg, et cetera, is pretty much seems to be controlled by this tribe. So and again, looking a little bit deeper, if we look at the work of Tex Mars and Michael Hoffman and Michael Jones and people like that, authors, we see that, you know, this particular tribe feels that it has a mandate to take over the world. Let's look at the title of Michael Hoffman's book, Judaism Discovered. It's 1,100 pages, I think, 1,102 pages, and he goes through the Talmud. And the title of his book is Judaism Discovered, A Study of the Anti-Biblical Religion of Racism, Self-Worship, Superstition, and Deceit. Okay, in other words, it's all built into the belief system. The structure of the belief system is it's okay to rob, steal, kill, and cheat goyim, non-Jews, and, you know, to rape little boys and girls. It's all okay because we're just beasts, you know, we're just animals. We are here to serve them, you know. In fact, here's Rabbi Yovidia Yosef, senior Sephardic and Talmudic scholar for Israel recently, to 2010, said, Goyim, non-Jews, were born only to serve us. Without that, they have no place in the world, only to serve the people of Israel. With Gentiles, Christians, and others, it will be like any person. They need to die, but God will give them longevity. Why? Imagine that one's donkey would die. They'd lose their money. That is his servant. That's why he gets a long life, to work well for this Jew. Why are the Gentiles needed? They will work, and they will plow, they will reap, and we will sit like Effendi and eat. That is why Gentiles were created. Okay, these people really believe this stuff. And so this incredible superiority complex. It's hard to get your mind wrapped around it. But this has then, this is children of Satan, basically. And, that Jesus was offered that same deal out in the desert, wasn't he? He said, devil supposedly said, bow down and worship me and I'll give you all the kingdoms on the earth. And Jesus, of course, refused. But this group obviously took the deal and said, yeah, we want all the kingdoms of the world. And yes, we will bow down and worship you. And, this plays out then in history. Child sacrifice, sacrifice of Christian children, satanic ritual abuse, I think, is Jewish ritual abuse. And satanic ritual murder, I think, is Jewish ritual murder. They worship Moloch. They worship, the serpent and all this really, really rotten stuff. Most people go through their lives without a clue that this is going on in the background because they all know, some nice Jews. But, the rabbis like, Rabbi Dov Zakheim, who looks like lost $3.6 trillion of the Pentagon's money and presided over 9/11, they're not so nice. They're the ones who, do the blood sacrifices for their God.
Also, I'm just jumping in here because you said about knowing nice Jews. Well, what I've discovered through a lot of people that I've interviewed, and so many people have said this to me either on or off the air, and they've said, well, we've known some Jewish people for years and always got on well with them. But as soon as we raised any of these issues, they stopped being our friends. And so it goes to show that the Jewish community, it's not just these elites at the top. It goes right down to the Jew on the street. And they'll be quite nice to you if you don't know what they're up to. But if you suddenly say, oh, did you hear about this, about 9/11? Or did you hear about that? Or did you hear about, this Holocaust thing may actually be false. Suddenly they don't want to know you. And I'm talking about people. I know people that have known these, that have been close friends with Jews for like 40 years. And they've just lost their friendship because they've just said something. I mean, we've been friends for a while and we don't necessarily agree on everything. But the attitude is if you disagree with them on one of these points, they'll drop you as a friend. I mean, this is what I've heard from so many different sources, Eric.
That's a very good point. It's a matter of personal identity, and I think the whole business of being your friend is often a tactic. And, they say, what's the phrase, a secret, or a, well, it'll kind of be somebody who pretends to be your friend as a tactic, can actually be your enemy. In other words, an open enemy is actually preferable to somebody who is using friendship as a way to manipulate you and deceive you. And I think I've lived long enough to have experienced this, and again, 40 years. I mean, you can have a friend that you think is rock solid, but then you realize something else is maybe going on and that allegiance to this particular tribe will trump all everything else to the point where your friendship is in the trash can.
And also, the Vito Corleone line, the Marlon Brando line out of The Godfather, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. That seems to be what they're adopting, Eric.
Yeah. So it's a tactic. And, what we're talking about now is kind of being wise in the ways of the world. I mean, when you're 20 or 30 or 40 even, for most people, you just kind of look at everybody the same. I did anyway. But then there's, when you start to pick up on these subtleties, the serpent is the most subtle of all the animals, according to the Bible. You pick up on these subtleties and you realize things are not as they appear. And that's a very hard realization for people. For me, it was very hard. But when it gets repeated, you have to defend yourself from this. And of course, as you point out in your book, Synagogue of Satan, I mean, this tribe has been kicked out of some 100 nations or more in the past 2,000 years because they always, wherever they go, they act as a nation within a nation to subvert and destroy the host nation. And in the past, the host nation has caught on and said, okay, you're out, you know, or your professional opportunities are limited. You can't be in education. You can't be in politics. You can't be in these professions. So there have been ways in the past to stem this, to check this tendency of the Jews to want to destroy the host nations and the cultures which they're in. But in America, you know, I think largely because of this Holocaust hoax, you know, there have been about 50 years there where you couldn't criticize the Jews at all. And they were able to make tremendous inroads in the United States since World War II, perhaps largely because of this dynamic, which is, you know, normally there's this historical suspicion of the Jews. But in America, you know, at the academic institutions and whatnot, the Jews were you know, really favored. And I think they really control our academic institutions now, having taught 30 years in them. This is also going on behind the scenes, you know. You show up to the department meeting and you don't know it, but you know, the agenda has already been fixed and the decisions have been made, you know, because of the people who are of this tribe who have manipulated the things behind the scenes. I mean, this plays out at all structural levels within our nation, even to a small university academic department, as I've seen in my life. So, yeah, after a while, you start to catch on. Maybe a lot of people never catch on, I think, because this is a very tricky bunch. They've been working on this for a long time, you know. But here, I'll give you another quote. Major, to show the historical legs of this, 1926 book by Major General Count Sherep Spiridovich, The Secret World Government or The Hidden Hand. It is the Jews who are the secret inner council of the principal organized horrendous movements at work in the world with which organized government has to contend. One, Grand Orient Freemasonry, center in Paris. Two, Theosophy, with its innumerable manifestations. Okay, that's now the New Age movement derived from the Jewish Kabbalah system of satanic black magic. Three, nationalism of an aggressive kind, now represented by Pan-Germanism. Four, international finance. Five, social revolution. So again, coming from these, you know, Masonic lodges, and we know that in the Council of Wilhelmsbad in 1782, the Illuminati of Adam Weishaupt and the Rothschilds took over the top degrees of Masonry and have used Masonry then as their front. And now the highest degrees are Jewish degrees within Masonry. So again, you might know some nice Masons, and they might be lower degree Masons who don't know that at the higher degree, 30, 31, 32, 33 and above degrees, those people know that they're worshiping Satan. And, you know, with glee, they do Satan's work on earth. And this gets into what's really going on, which is Satan's kids have taken over. And that puts the rest of us in a bind. Do we want to go along with this program, get along and go along? Or are we going to call it like it is and try to reverse this? I mean, those 4 million people that were killed in Iraq based on the 1991 and 2003 wars and the UN sanctions in between, they're innocent. They didn't do anything to deserve that. But yet the United States and Britain and various countries, the coalition countries, you know, bombed them back to the Stone Age. Who's guilty? Well, certainly we know who orchestrated it, but the American people paid for it. The American people went over there and did it. So we are culpable now. You know, we go down, you know, the millions of people that the CIA has killed in their secret wars. The United States, you know, didn't know about this, really. They fooled us. But we paid for it. We did it. So in a sense, we're guilty. So we have to wake up. We have to realize who has kind of captured the ship of state. And where they're taking us is not very good. They certainly want to destroy the United States and England and all the nations of the world as per the Illuminati plan of 1776. And we can know that. And then we have to figure out how to deal with it. And that's what we're trying to do right now and right here.
Yes, exactly. And just to let you know, we've got about 6 minutes left. So is there any other information that you want to get through before we wrap up, or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, well, you know, I've got so many lists here. I just sent you, I'll put this on the notes to our program. I've got 58 pages of notes that I put together for this, with long lists of people who have, you know, dual Israeli-American citizenship, and, you know, people who are leading the newspaper industry, people who are leading the Hollywood industry, all Jewish. But let me just go through past and present dual Israeli-U.S. citizens in government. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, head of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff. These are all Jews and dual Israeli-American citizens. Chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, Richard Perle. These are neoconservatives, PNAC neoconservatives. Deputy Defense Secretary and President of the World Bank, Paul Wolfowitz, PNAC Jew. Undersecretary of Defense, Douglas Faith, PNAC. National Security Council Advisor, Elliot Abrams, PNAC. Vice President Dick Cheney's Chief of Staff, Louis Scooter Libby, PNAC. White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Republican Joshua Bolten, PNAC. Undersecretary of State Political Affairs, Mark Grossman. Director of Policy Planning at the State Department, Richard Haass. Also head of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is 80% Jewish. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Zoellick. Pentagon Defense Policy Board, James Schlesinger, UN Representative John Bolton, now again prominently a war hawk in the Trump administration. All these people are Jewish, Israeli-American citizens. Undersecretary for Arms Control, David Wormser, Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, Elliot Cohen, Senior Advisor to the President, Steve Goldsmith, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Christopher Gersten, Assistant Secretary of State Lincoln Bloomfield, Deputy Assistant to the President Jay Lefkowitz, White House Political Director Ken Millman, National Security Study Group Edward Lutwak, Pentagon Defense Policy Board Kenneth Edelman, Defense Intelligence Agency Analyst Lawrence Larry Franklin, National Security Council Advisor Robert Satloff, President of Export-Import Import Bank of the U.S., Mel Sembler, Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development for Public Affairs, Mark Weinberger, White House speechwriter David Frum, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer, who also, I believe, is a Chabad Lubavitch rabbi, Pentagon Defense Policy Board, Henry Kissinger, who reportedly said military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy, Deputy Secretary of Commerce Samuel Bodman, you know, we can go on and on, Undersecretary of State for Management Bonnie Cohen, Director for Foreign Service Institute Ruth Davis, and let's look at our Congress. Dual Israeli-American citizenship, Senator Barbara Boxer, Senator Benjamin Cardin, Senator Russ Feingold, Senator Al Franken, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Herb Kohl, Senator Frank Lautenberg. So it doesn't matter whether they're Democrat or Republican, they're working for Israel. Senator Joe Lieberman, Senator Carl Levin, Senator Bernard Sanders, Bernie Sanders almost got president. By the way, Hillary Clinton also is Jewish. Senator Ron Wyden, crypto-Jewish, secret-Jewish. Representative Gary Ackerman, Representative John H. Adler, Representative Shelley Berkeley, Representative Howard Berman, Steve Cohen, Susan Davis, Elliot Engel, Bob Filner, Barney Frank, Gabriel Giffords, Alan Grayson, Jane Harmon, Paul Hodes, Steve Israel, Steve Kagan, Ronald Klein, Sander, you start to see the names here. Sander, you start to catch on to the names, actually. Sander Levin, Nikita Lowy, Jerry Nadler, Jerry Polis, Steve Rothman, Jan Schakowsky, Adam Schiff. These names are very Jewish, by the way. Allison Swartz, Brad Sherman, when are we going to wake up, folks? Debbie Wasserman Schultz played a prominent role in the Democratic caucuses and through the election to or the nomination to Hillary Clinton. On and on and on and on. Henry Waxman, Anthony Weiner, John Yarmuth, all these people, dual citizens. Again, so many of them are PNAC. So many of them are in our government and are guiding our government. I've got long description of some of these individuals. We really should know them. It's like Andy. It's like the quote, the famous quote by Disraeli, who Lord Beaconsfield is his other name. Well, the first I think Jew to be in the British Parliament, wasn't he? And he said, "So you see, my dear Koningsberg or Koningsby, the people that are really pulling the strings are very different." Here's what he says, the actual, in his book, Koningsby. "The first Jesuits were Jews. That mysterious Russian diplomacy, which so alarms Western Europe, is organized and principally carried on by the Jews. That mighty revolution of 1848, which will be, in fact, a second and greater revolution, and of which so little is as yet known in England, is entirely developing under the auspices of Jews who almost monopolize the professional chairs of Germany. Neander, founder of spiritual Christianity, and who is Regius Professor of Divinity in the University of Berlin, is a Jew. Bennery, equally famous in the same university, is a Jew. Well, the Arabic professor of Heidelberg is a Jew. A few years back, we were applied to by Russia. Now there has been no friendship between the court of St. Petersburg and my family. It has Dutch connections, and we have generally supplied it our representations and our representations in favor of the Polish Hebrews, a numerous race, but the most suffering and degraded of all the tribes, has not been very agreeable to the Tsar. However, circumstances drew to an approximation between the Romanovs and the Sidonias, Rothschilds. I resolved to go myself to St. Petersburg. I had on my arrival an interview with the Russian Minister of Finance, Count Kanskrin. I beheld the son of a Lithuanian Jew. The loan was connected with the affairs of Spain. I resolved on repairing to Spain from Russia. I had an audience immediately on my arrival with the Spanish minister, Señor Mendizabal. I beheld one like myself, the son of Nuevo Cristiano, New Christian, a Jew of Aragon. In consequence of what transpired at Madrid, I went straight to Paris to consult the president of the French Council. I beheld the son of a French Jew. We fixed on Prussia, and the president of the council made an application to the Prussian minister, who attended a few days after our conference. Count Arnim entered the cabinet, and I beheld a Prussian Jew. So you see, my dear Koningsby, the world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes." Well, okay, so this is a historic reality. This is the hidden hand. The hidden hand is controlling America and controlling all these wars, controlling our draconian global police state, which includes this draconian gang stalking operation, which I call GOG's new Gestapo, for global organized gang stalking, neuro warfare groups, electronic surveillance, slavery, tracking, targeting, torture, and psyops operations, much more descriptive than gang stalking, GOG's new Gestapo. And GOG, of course, refers to the Antichrist system of the Bible, which is the synagogue of Satan. And Gestapo, of course, is a reference to the draconian police state of Nazi Germany, where neighbors spied on neighbors, and the there was only one police, and they were ganged up with the military and the Nazi party, and they would send you to concentration camps. But now they don't send you to concentration camps yet, although we have 800 FEMA camps in America. Now, another synonym I have for gang stalking and GOG's new Gestapo is TEC, which stands for the Electronic Concentration Camp, which many gang stalking victims find themselves in. They figured out how to isolate and remove you from society using these wavelengths, these frequencies that have been weaponized. So who's behind all this? Well, we've identified that group. Now we have to figure out how to restore civil rights, that is to say, due process of law and the Constitution, which they have absolutely torn up. And we have to decide as a nation we don't torture people, because this is what they're doing. They're torturing people all around the world and secretly with this gang stalking, GOG's new Gestapo TEC system. And it's the same group. And their goal is Jewish utopia, the Antichrist kingdom on earth, Jewish universal empire. And I guess it's going to happen unless we say no, or hopefully we can pray and hope that Christ will return. Meanwhile, pray to God, and keep rowing to shore is my motto, Andy.
Thank you so much, Eric. Excellent presentation as always. We're out of time, so I want to thank everyone for listening. I'll be back with you all tomorrow, and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on the Eurofolk Radio Network. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.